listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live, live, live.
This is the Spirit of Life Metaphysics Radio Program, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Michael Kelly and
Good
Dr.
evening
Vicky
and
Hunter.
Welcome to the Spirit of Life Program for Wednesday, March 6th. My name is Michael Kelly. I'm here tonight with Dr. Vicky Hunter.
Well, good evening, Michael. I am really, really excited about tonight. And we have Dr. Kelly with us tonight.
We do.
Hey, everyone.
Welcome. All right. Well, we're so looking forward to tonight's program. Thank you for everybody that's joining us live. We always appreciate your contributions in chat. We always love seeing you. And thank you to those joining us in the archives as well. We appreciate you taking the time out of your week to catch up with us. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. Now, very excited for tonight's topic, but first, we're always going to begin with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. Those are, 1, do no harm, do right. 2, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4. We are all equal. One planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. 5. We recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6. We are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7. Self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will create self-completeness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. So, as Dr. Vicky said, we're joined tonight by Dr. Douglas Kelly. Welcome.
Hi, everyone. Good to be back with you. Hope everyone's doing well. Good to see so many in the chat room, and welcome to those listening to the archive as well. So, again, tonight we are privileged and honored to have Dr. Rick Teleska with us. Pardon me, Rick. My bad. But in my defense, I turned 65 and now I'm shot. Anyway, it's good to have you tonight. And before I bring you on, I want to read the your bio, because it's interesting and it will refresh everybody's memory and be new to those who haven't heard it. Rick Teleska, PhD, has been an investigator and student of the UFO phenomenon for over 50 years and has worked with numerous UFO groups, including NICAP, MUFON, Norfolk, and the Center for UFO Studies. During that time, he has completed over 500 investigations and numerous interviews with military and government witnesses. Rick is a consultant to investigators in data, photo, and video analysis. He has also conducted forensic analyses of numerous high-profile historical UFO incidents and studies. Dr. Rick earned 2 PhDs in metaphysical science and ufology from IMHS. He also holds a master's degree in computer science research and development and worked as a technical consultant on cyber systems defense, threat assessment and mitigation, data authentication, and forensic data analysis for the government and private aerospace corporations. It was his work in these areas that gave him access to military and intelligence information and specialists willing to share their experience regarding the UFO phenomenon and extraterrestrial life. Under his pen name, R.J. Teles, he is author of the controversial book, The Final Revelation, The Sun Project, based on the actual experience of individuals who served for many years with military and intelligence organizations in senior-level positions that provided access to one of the most closely guarded secrets in the history of mankind. He is currently working on establishing the Center for Theoretical Exoscience and exomythology. Dr. Rick, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Dr. Doug. How are you tonight?
I'm good, except for my memory or my ability to pronounce words.
Well, hey, just wait till you get to be my age.
Yeah. I welcome that. So,
we all have our moments, Doug.
And you can use it as an excuse sometimes, trust me.
Yeah. Hey, before we get started into the topic for tonight, which is about the grays, there's a couple of questions I want to put out there. One first is in the chat room, Dr. Kevin. He says, good evening, everyone. I've been looking forward to this broadcast all week. Dr. Mike, please extend my compliments to our guest tonight. I read the final revelation. It's a great read, overflowing with information. My question to Dr. Rick would be, are you using fiction to cloak the truth? And how much classified material did you insert?
The answer to that is yes and yes. There was a certain amount of fiction that we it's interesting that he caught that. Not a lot of people catch it. There was a lot of information that we put in there we had to be very careful with. Let's start with the fictional part. It didn't exactly happen the way it was written there, but we kind of did it that way to protect some people. We put in probably more classified information than we should have. We thought we weren't doing putting in as much. We pushed the envelope, but I would have been the first one to tell you, and in all the years I've been doing this, I never expect to get pushback from any, let's say, authority on this, official government group. But when we got done, I certainly did. And that's another story that is hard to believe. Wow. And fortunately, I had a very powerful friend who was able to cut it off for me. But, yeah, there's a certain amount of classified material. Now, some of what we put in there is not classified anymore. It's and it has nothing to do with the UFO aspects. It had to do with some other stuff that we talked about that's not really classified anymore. It had to do with global communications and the spiderweb effect. If you read the book, we talked something about how there's using the electromagnetic field around the Earth as kind of like a spiderweb, and anytime something happened, we could tell by the effect on that spiderweb what was going on, kind of like the HARP type of thing. At the time, a lot of that was classified. I think that's where we pushed the envelope a little too far when we talked about it.
Fascinating.
Okay. Yeah, cool. All right, so I want to get to another question again before we get into our information about the gray. Now, there are three questions from a TFU student in Poland, and I had forgotten to bring them up when you were here last time, last January 17th. So I want to take these questions, and to the student, I'm going to let you know that we're going to ask these at a certain time. I'm going to take care of the first one right now, and then we're going to inject the other two in our future discussion because some of it bears on it. So the first question from the student is about the Miami Mall UFO that was, I think, on January 5th, somewhere around there. Do you know much about that, Dr. Rick?
Yeah, I'm pretty familiar with it. When it happened, of course, I knew fairly soon. I get these feeds. I knew it was going on, took a look at it, and I suspected what it might be. In the end, I'm sorry, but it ended up being a hoax. It was some gangs were involved. They were lighting fireworks, general fooling around there really is what it was. And, of course, the reports kind of got out of hand. I mean, along with that, I don't know if you heard about the sightings in Las Vegas. Does anybody remember the people saying that the aliens were in their backyard?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the police arrived, and they thought there was some stuff strange. Well, that wasn't a hoax. These people thought they were seeing something. It was just coincident that night that there happened to be a meteor fly across the sky, which preceded all that, and people kind of got caught up in it, and that's pretty easy to do.
Yeah,
blew out of proportion. Yeah.
Okay, so let's get into our main topic for tonight, which is what are the grays? Are they an ancient alien race, artificial life form, mythological creature, or something else? And so the first question is, when did they appear in written records and ancient texts?
And that's really a good starting place because we have to kind of have a baseline here. Ancient cultures, archaeological records, and religious texts have often described what appeared to be humanoid extraterrestrials. I'm talking about the humanoids, sometimes what we call the Nordics, in the presence of the Greys. But over the years, the Greys seem to have become predominant in a lot of the reports that we get in the close encounters. But we have ancient Mesoamerican, we have European glyphs, the Aboriginal Wangina. I don't know if everybody's seen a picture of the Wangina. It's taller than what we would think of as a Grey, but it has the same head, the same shape. We have the little people from Celtic legend. Imhotep in Egypt was a smaller man with a rounded, perhaps elongated head. We've been hearing about that. Now, that's not where we first started hearing this, although I don't know where some people got the inspiration. But in 1875, there was a French opera called Voyage to the Moon, and they had these little people, which pretty much resembled the Greys. And then, of course, you had H.G. Wells with the first men in the moon, the little green men. And then there's a 1902 book, Gift of the Magic Staff, where little green men help a boy visit the clouds. So we've been talking about these for a while. Now, the interesting thing here that we have to note is sometimes they're green, sometimes they're white, sometimes they're gray. And sometimes they have skin-tight suits, and sometimes they have no suits but skin that looks mesh-like. So they've been around for a while, and if we stick with what we call the modern era, let's say from the 1940s or so, I mean, we have to put H.G. Wells in there because that could be the inspiration for some people in the 50s. We don't know what H.G. Wells' inspiration was. But one thing I want to throw out there is what was interesting is that in the 50s, United States Air Force had a code name for these little people called goblins. And the question is why? Why would they have a code name for something like that in the 50s? Well, in the 60s and the early 70s, we probably didn't have a clue, but as Roswell became apparent in the late 70s, all of a sudden there appears to be a connection. You know, Roswell occurred. We have a code name for something called goblins, but we didn't really know a lot about Roswell until the 70s. And then, of course, in 1955, you had the Kelly-Hopkinsville incident where they said these little creatures are bouncing around outside. Again, we don't know what the inspiration is for that, but they've been around for a while. They're not – as long as the modern era of the UFO, and we're going to say 1945 or so, we've been hearing about them. And they've been in a lot of books. So we could go back and you could probably – people here listening probably know a number of pieces of literature that might have described something like this. They seem to be a little different sometimes, but they've been around for a while.
Cool. All right. So next question, why are they here?
Well, you know, that's probably a question as metaphysical as we can get. What are their intentions? Well, it might come down to, as we go through the discussion here, we're gonna come back to that. What are they? And then we might have more of an idea of what their intentions are. Now, are their intentions positive? We don't know. Are they positive on their own moral level? We don't know, because what's their moral level? Maybe their values are different than ours. So as we go through this, maybe we will kind of circle back to that as we talk about the different possibilities of what they might be. Or who they might be. And so I think we're going to come back to that.
You know, you bring up a good point that I'll kind of branch off on just for a moment about their moral values. You know, is it the same as our moral values? You know, and I've thought about this many times and written about a little bit in the coursework about why are they here? What are they, you know, what do we have to worry about the Earth being, you know, overthrown or invaded by aliens, like so many of the sci-fi movies will show. And, you know, it's always been my position, barring any other knowledge, that if they were here to invade us, they would have done that long, long ago, you know, perhaps thousands or tens of thousands of years ago. But so I don't think that's the case. And, you know, and I wonder, and I don't know this, but I speculate that this is true, that any sentient creature that is technologically advanced enough to travel through the, you know, the galaxy and come here you know, they must have, not only have they built the technology to do so, but they must have had the time to grow emotionally and grow spiritually, you know, in that same time. And if they haven't blown themselves up, you know, if they haven't killed off themselves in the process, then it's my supposition or hypothesis that they would have this moral code, essentially, of do no harm, do right, and the prime directive, you know. And people wonder, why are they here? You know, I'm talking about UFOs in general. Well, why would we go anywhere? We want to study them, you know. So that's where I'll shut up.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, the first thought you have is my first thought. I mean, after studying these for all these years, if they were going to do something, it's obvious that they have the power to do so. It would have been done. The second piece is when we start to talk about invasion, well, you know, we're used to invasion from Hollywood. And what does that mean? And, you know, invasion could simply mean being here, being among us, studying, doing what they do, maybe even providing some assistance along the way. So I don't see it as a bad thing. You know, I know people who are afraid, oh, we're going to get zapped or something. Well, you know, who knows how many civilizations are out there? Maybe there is a bad one, but I tend to agree with you, Dr. Doug. I don't think that's something for us to be concerned about right now.
Yeah. Plus, you know, anytime our jets have fired on them or tried to take them out, they just leave, you know, they don't fire back. They don't, I know there's stories, but they leave. It's like they don't want to engage us.
Yeah. I don't think there's, you know, I used to study, I studied Taekwondo, the whole aspect of Taekwondo and Korean philosophy and whatever. And one time my wife went with me to this competition, and this is along your point, and she met a lot of the people who were there, and a lot of them are very accomplished masters of both the arts, the art and the art of fighting. She goes, I've never met such polite people. They're always very calm, very patient with everybody. I said, when you're that confident and you have what you believe that much strength, you don't have to respond. You don't need to threaten anybody or to do that. I think it's the same type of thing. They're so powerful. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody once said, we have to change our order of thought here to understand what's going on, and we can't right now because we don't have the knowledge. But yeah, I think you're right. There's no reason for them to do anything. We really can't hurt them, I don't believe.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right, next question. Are they an evolved, advanced, sentient, extraterrestrial race possessing super consciousness?
Well, you know, and that's one of the thoughts, that what we're actually looking at is an alien race here. But, you know, there's some questions there. They all seem to be similar in a group. I mean, I know there's different, we have different incidents where somebody say, well, in this incident they look like this, but in this incident they look like this. But within an incident or within an experience, they all seem to be the same. And would that be the case with an alien race? Maybe their environment demanded that. I don't know. They could be an alien race. But then again, you know, that would be, they would then be a product of their environment. And then the question is, if they are an alien race, do we share a common lineage with them some way? Some people suggest that in the future, we may actually evolve to what looks like a gray alien. I don't know if I buy that. I've seen studies from, I think it was the University of Minnesota, where they looked at what the dinosaur would look like today if it was still alive. Yeah. And it became bipedal, but it still kind of looked like a dinosaur to a certain extent. So I don't know that we're going to go away from that. If they are an alien race, one of the big questions for me has always been, have they manipulated human development?
There's a lot of conjecture about that.
There's a lot. And
Marians just, you know, happened on the scene. Like, well, you know, it developed.
We had that great leap at one point. Yeah. Of course, and if you listen to the Vatican, it says nature makes no leaps. The Vatican astronomer once said that, and it was like, what are you trying to tell us? But if we look at our own science today, I was reading again today about CRISPR, the gene editing tool, some of the stuff that they're doing with that now to turn off genes and change the way people grow. The FDA just approved a pharmaceutical for gene editing, which was for sickle cell anemia.
I saw that. Yeah.
So we're doing this. We're actually changing things. I saw one the other day about T cells, and I don't remember. I guess when cells die, that's when as we start to get older, certain cells die or they're not as productive, and that's why we start to age, because they turn off certain things. Well, This company just did some testing with T cells on mice, and on older mice, when they use these T cells to get rid of the older dead cells, they became young again. And younger mice age slower. So the point here is I like to draw this technological parallel. We're not exactly parallel with them. But when people say to me, well, you know, you can't say that they're this because that can't be. Well, yeah, it can be. Do I think they manipulated the human blood? I believe they whatever they are, they did. Whoever they were, whether it was the Greys or who maybe created the Greys, I believe yes. I believe they have.
Well, Dr. Jerry has asked in the chat. She said she believes they're a dying race and they need our DNA to survive. How do you feel about that?
Well, here's what I was told. Well, we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves. I don't know that that's necessary, because I think their DNA might be advanced of ours. But here's what I was told, that they were a race. Now, I'm not saying Greys, though, but I'm saying that what we're dealing with here in some form, whether they created the Greys or not, we're probably going to talk about this in the next session. And this was told to me by people in the military and showing me reports that didn't exist. That's the way we talk about things. That said, what we're dealing with is a race that did what we did. They grew and expanded faster than their world could accommodate it. So now what they need to know is, where did they go wrong? So they need to create something or to observe something in the same position that might help them answer their questions. That makes sense?
Where it I'm does going. To me.
You know, there's on your on that point about all similar or the result of evolution, you know, it dawned on me as you were talking about that what if we humans in the future, you know, we go and we discover a civilized planet that's not as advanced as us. So we want to study them, because that's what we do, right? Science studies everything, every insect, every animal, everything. And so we go, and their inhabitants see us on occasion here and there. And what are they going to see? Because if you look at humanity, you've got all kinds. You know, you got blondes. You know, you got brunettes. You've got short, tall, fat, skinny, round, you know, every, you know, Asian, you know, you've got all the different aspects, ethnicities of human beings. And so we're all human. And if they see different subsections of that, they're going to say, oh, well, these ETs were this way. And the other group says, well, no, they were this way. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So could that be a similar thing here, where you've got essentially the same ETs, you know, within I know there are a lot of variations on them, but talking about the Greys, because you got some that are short, some that are medium, and some that are taller. I'll let you comment on that.
Well, yeah, I think, yes. I mean, we seem to think we're the only ones that are what we are, and that's not necessarily true. All right, we seem to think very egocentrically or human-centrically, when that may not be the case. And you know, as you started to say something, I thought of something else, of things that we do. Have you heard of terror reformation? And I'm probably saying it wrong right now, but we have this plan.
Terraforming?
Terraforming? Terraforming, that may be – we have this plan where we can go to Mars and we think we can change the atmosphere there. We think we can change the ground. Terraforming. You know, somebody could think of the same type of thing. We could be, again, we could be seeing ourselves, our future selves here, doing the same thing, making the same mistakes, if we don't pay attention.
Very good. All right, let's go to the next. Michael, do you have a question?
Well, I just was going to add, you know, something along similar lines of what you were saying about different varieties of the same species. Interesting thought would be one civilization that encompasses more than one sentient species.
Yep.
Just a thought, throwaway.
All right, next question. Regarding the Greys, are they a biological creation of an advanced extraterrestrial race like Mars Rover, but more sophisticated? That's a technical term, by the way. Sophisticated.
They might be more sophisticated. We're dealing with something outside of our world, so you never know. I like this one a lot, and there's reasons why I like this one, some which I won't get into, but things I've seen, people I've spoken to. But when I look at this, they are the perfect design for space travel, okay? One of the biggest issues – I mean, I still don't understand why we can't get back to the moon. That's really starting to bother me a lot. But yeah. We did it once. Why can't we do it now? We have new technology. But anyway – one of the biggest issues for us going to to Mars is not the technology; it's the human beings. You know, our bodies can't handle this. All right, so that's our biggest problem. Plus, the weight, the energy it takes. But here we have this creature that apparently has this large head, which could easily protect a brain or some type of intelligence. It's got large black eyes, so it could handle whatever light source it may encounter in space, which could be bright, could be dark. It doesn't seem to need – it has a very slim body, which wouldn't be affected much by gravity, and we know gravity's changed from different places. Doesn't seem to have a need to carry food with it. So this could be the perfect machine. And I've heard a lot of people – very smart people, a lot smarter than me, believe that. You know, people who worked in places like Jet Propulsion Laboratory and whatever, they believe that. And when you look at things like our engineered living materials projects and some of the other things that we've done to create, like I mentioned as we were talking, scientists have built the first modular body that's alive, but they can change parts. It seems to make sense. We don't want to go anywhere. Why would we go somewhere before we know if it's safe? Let's send a machine in there. That's what we do now.
Yeah.
You know, and then when you look at them, you look at their form. And we have another company right now that just started – I have the name of them here somewhere. They just started building anthropomorphic robots. And why do we do that? We do that because we can send these robots to places we don't want to go – but use the same tools and technology that we would need to use if we were to follow them. All right? So they have to be built like us. So this is what we could be looking there. I mean, are they living beings? Are they AI? Do they possess consciousness? Or are they self-aware, sentient, non-sentient? It's interesting how you hear in a lot of the alien abduction stories – excuse me – how they say that they seem to be indifferent to human suffering. Now, you know, I know a lot of doctors that seem to be indifferent to human suffering. But I guess that's the way you're trained. But it seems like they don't care. They're doing what they have to do. And I think that's a very good possibility because it parallels what we're doing. Now, the next question, and I think I put it in there, is have they achieved singularity, which is something that's come up with AI for us right now. Have they basically outgrown their creators? Because as I mentioned in the beginning, we used to see them together a lot with these Nordic types or one type or another, and now we don't. We see them by themselves. Mm-hmm. Have they now outgrown their creators and they are a living entity in and of themselves?
Autonomy?
Yeah. I mean, we don't – you know one thing I've never heard, and if anybody has heard this, they can tell me about it. I've never heard a lot about any type of reproductive organs of any type with the Greys.
Yeah, me either.
You know, we're creating the anthropomorphic robots. Somebody could have created this, and this is the best way to go somewhere where it could be dangerous. You know, the radiation in space, the human biome goes crazy when you go out into space. Cells grow at a rate unprecedented on Earth, and that alone could kill the astronauts. So I heard somebody once say, if you're a true woodsman and you hike in places where you're really out in the woods, you never go into somebody's camp or walk into somebody's camp without announcing yourself or looking carefully before you go in there. And that's true. So, I think this is a very real possibility. I think the reports I've seen and stuff that I've heard about where the people involved had difficulty determining whether they're living beings or not, but ultimately concluded they may be living, but they're not actually alien, the alien race itself. That's the answer that I have that, that I've heard many times.
All right. Let's go on to the next question. This one has to do, and there's two parts to this, and I let you know. In your outline, are Greys demons, goblins, fairies, imps, as described in folklore, redefined? And along with this, I want to bring in the second question from our student. He asks, I have heard of religious groups that approach UFO encounters as demons. They advise prayer in such cases and claim that it brings results. Are these fairy tales, or does the UFO actually see fear, prayer, prefer to move away and leave such a person alone?
You know, in my mind, religion is a human construct. Time is a human construct. It's something that we have to measure. I don't know that either one of those exists within the nature of the universe. Is there something that created all this? I firmly believe there is. Is that what we believe is God in our religions? I don't think so. I'm going to make the statement here that there's a huge difference between God or creator and religion.
Definitely.
All right. So, but there is an interesting thing. I mean, people describe things in terms that they understand. So if they saw things in the 12th century, they may not know what it is. They're going to call it a demon. Maybe this is what they saw. Now maybe the Egyptians could have called it the same thing. They chose not to. The little people from Celtic lore, they called them, imps and fairies and leprechauns. Maybe this is what they were seeing, but they described it in the terms, that they had. I don't think prayer or anything like that is going to, we're talking about, I believe, a real physical existence of a civilization. All right. I don't know that prayer is going to bother them. But when you mentioned that, there's something interesting, and I want to get your opinion on this, Dr. Doug, is that this whole topic seems to have the duality of religion in it. And what I mean by that is, and if I don't explain this right, hopefully you'll understand what I'm trying to say. In religion, you have all the good, right? If I'm Catholic, okay? So I do all this, and I'm good, and this is going to happen. That's the good. But then there's the bad. If I don't, then religion tells me that there are the demons and these people and this that'll do this. And it seems like we have the same thing in this whole topic that we're talking about. Am I making any sense here at all?
Well, you are about the religion. How were you seeing a similarity with the Greys?
Well, I think some people are looking at them and saying, well, the Greys are good. They're all doing this. But at the same time, we also have a group that are bad, and they're doing testing on us and that. And do we have to have both? I mean, is that just reality?
I think if I can inject here, I think that religion affected like this New Age movement. And I've taken issue with that for a lot of decades about how, you know, if you project positive thought, you will get a new house, right? Which is all nonsense. Because they're not universal ideas. They're, you know, hierarchical kind of ideals about who deserves what. And I think that the New Age movement kind of broke it down, but influenced by the thinking of religion. There's good and bad, you know. These are evil, those are good. You know, you're a teacher of the light bearers, and you follow what the universe tells you without any sensibility to it. That's my idea of where that came from, of our idea that we have to have good aliens and bad aliens. When, well, if they were really that bad of aliens, then we'd be in bigger trouble than we are, I think.
So I'll add this. I'll add this. I'm with you. I personally believe that religion has had a profound and monumental impact on all of human thinking and human everything, right? I mean, it's good and evil, you know. Every religion has that. I've always been uncomfortable with the concept that you need to have bad to appreciate good. I mean, I've always been uncomfortable with that. However, with grace, you know, and I'm also not a total believer in the abduction phenomena because there are too many other real explanations. Doesn't mean it's not possible. So nobody gets their ire up here. It could be, but not to the extent that some of these so-called experts are telling us because of the huge infrastructure and logistics necessary to abduct millions of people a year. Just sorry, it's really a hard pill to swallow. So that being said, do I think that aliens are evil? At this point, I have no reason to believe that. I have nothing to show me that, you know, that are anything. I mean, are they good? I don't know about that, but they're certainly following the prime directive, at least to a big extent. They might have been in contact with government officials and so forth, and they might be, you know, but are they harming humanity? I have seen no evidence of that. I don't know if that fits into what you were looking for or not.
Well, Dr. Zach is asking in the chat, he had heard that 1% are ultimately a reptilian species, you know, the lizard people. We all know where that came from. But I'm not so sure. How do you feel about that, Dr. Rick?
Well, yeah, I've heard the same thing. I think it's 200 species of aliens. And what I can say about that is what I've heard and what I've been told is that there probably over thousands of years, there have been more than one species of alien that has visited this planet, which, you know, I can understand that. There's a trillion galaxies out there, and the universe is, what, 13.5 billion years old? How many civilizations could have come and gone in that time? But what I was told is – and this is – and it's always funny when I say something like this because of the topic that we're talking about. This may sound far out there, but what I was told is that there are different species out there. But in regards to Earth, there's one species in particular. And the way they put it, it's kind of like has dibs on us. And they kind of, for lack of a better term, warn all others off. And if others do come here they address it. Now, nobody could explain to me what these people – these are military people. They could explain what it means. But basically, it's like, well, no, there's one particular species that comes here, and it is more of a it looks just like us. If we throw away Hollywood for a while, it looks just like us, which would make sense. It's us, you know, in the future. I mean, the other thing that was pointed out to me is this is not – and I'm going to date myself here when I say this. I know this. This is not like the Jetsons where you get into your spaceship and you drive to Earth or I forgot who wrote the play, but Visit to a Small Planet a number of years ago with Jerry Lewis. Very hard to find, but if you find it, he was studying Earth. He jumped in a spaceship and he came to Earth. It doesn't work that way. All right. They believe it's state-sponsored as well as our state-sponsored. Well, not so much state-sponsored anymore. We have a lot of commercial companies going out to the moon and to other places, but that's what it is. But I do not think, based on everything that I've heard, you never say never, that the reptilian is an issue. Now, could the reptilians be something else? And I've heard this from many people. We mentioned something about what if dinosaurs had not died out in certain places? What would they look like today? Is it possible that somewhere some of these exist? It's a cryptid? You never know. I can never say never, but I don't really think that reptilian issue is true.
Okay. Let's go on to the next point in this discussion. Is there a paranormal aspect, metaphysical implications?
I think absolutely. I think there's both. I think there's a reality to this. There's a physical reality. And you probably know where my belief is. I think they're a biological creation. But there's a physical, and I think there's a metaphysical piece to this. You know, one question you get is, are they a dimensional being, or perhaps even, you know, a temporal vision, something out of time? Now, what's interesting about this is, if people don't know this, that back in the 80s, Dr. J. Allen Hynek, he was getting older, certainly before he passed away. This was an idea that he was throwing out there many times, and I don't think we understood it at that point, what he was trying to say. But he was suggesting that maybe what we're seeing is some type of a dimensional being, not that doesn't travel through space, but could travel through dimensions. And at the time, that I'm not so sure. Jacques Vallée kind of came up with the same thing. And again, we would say, I don't know about that. But all of a sudden now, we have quantum theory and quantum physics.
Mm-hmm.
And quantum physics says this can be possible. Are we seeing quantum entanglement? Are we seeing a case of non-local experience? Now, wouldn't that be a great way to travel through the universe without risking anything? Yeah.
I'm all over that one.
Right? I mean, I'm thinking if I can sit here and I can travel to Mars for a little while, I want to do that. Because, you know, to get to Mars, I'm probably going to have to go through the TSA line. They're going to check my luggage. You know, by the time I get there, then you got to get off, and the passport's got to be right. Quantum physics has changed everything in what we do. When we talk about a type 1 civilization, type 2 civilization, the Kardashev scale, which was done by Nikolai Kardashev, he was a Soviet astrophysicist. He ranks civilization by his scale, a type 1 civilization, which they say we're close to, but we're not there. He bases it on the energy that they can use. A type 1 civilization can take advantage of all the energy of their planet, which we're not there yet. But they also, a type 1 civilization, can also harness things like earthquakes and volcanoes. They can affect those. And you say, well, that's impossible. And then you get a type 2 civilization capable of harnessing the energy radiated by its own star. Okay, now, first we say that's impossible. Now I'm sitting here saying, wait a minute. If I know quantum physics and I can change things at the quantum level, and with quantum computing, that's what we're doing, I can change things at the quantum level, so I can now change the structure of something at the quantum level and change its molecular structure, I could stop a volcano. By changing the molecular structure of the material within the volcano. I mean, it's way out there, but theoretically, okay, so type one could be real. So if these people, you know, somebody said, well, you know, the big argument is, oh, if they exist, how could they possibly get here? Maybe they're smarter than we are. I mean, to me, that's just obvious. And how would they find us? Well, maybe they got lucky like we do. So, yeah, I think they're both. I think there's a metaphysical aspect to this, which is almost everything about it, and then there's a very physical aspect that we're starting to learn more about. And when you get into the metaphysical, the question is, are our perceptions being manipulated? Now, maybe we're seeing what we're seeing. Maybe we're not seeing what we're seeing. Maybe alien abduction theory is what they want us to see and what they want us to experience. The question then becomes, why? And why leave that memory? We've had that discussion before. That's a whole new road to go down to as to why are they here. But is that possible? Now, when we start to talk about stuff like that, we're talking about, do we have a creature that has telepathic or telekinetic ability? I believe it's very possible that could happen. And things I've been told are, they talked about it in terms of telepathic coupling. Okay, they can tune into our thoughts like we can tune into a radio. They can feel what we feel, see what we see, hear what we hear. And when we heard that a few years ago, people are saying, well, that's kind of crazy. But now we've been seeing experiments beyond the remote viewing stuff from the 80s and 90s. We have things called radio bio, and we know that cells communicate using electromagnetic fields. We know now that we have machines that can actually decode and read our brain waves. Okay, this is all real technology. Okay, to think that somebody in the future might not have the ability just to tune into that. They have that super consciousness where they've tuned in their brains to hear all this. You want to call it the Akashic Record, universal consciousness, whatever you want. I think it exists because we're all built on energy. The universe is built on energy. It's all part of that energy. Tap into it. You know, a dolphin has radar or sonar, and a bat has radar. We don't have that, but they do.
Yeah.
You know, so I think this is all very possible. We just, you know, I read an article the other day by a man by the name of Dr. Jeffrey Kripal. He's a PhD from Rice University. And he said, we cannot know what all this is because our current state of knowledge isn't capable of us knowing what all this is. And as much as that says something but nothing, I think he's really right. We're just not there yet.
Yeah. Cool.
Right. You know, so if I can interject, sorry. Go ahead, Doug. I had watched a video on Tyler Henry, the young psychic. They put electrodes on his brain and wired him all up, and then put him on a computer to see his brain activity while he was doing a reading, and it went off the scale, which they could only surmise that he was using parts of his brain. One part of his brain went quiet, and the other part went off the charts, and they couldn't explain it, like, because they had no measurement for what was happening in his brain. Now, I'm sure that lots of companies or governments have done such experiments also, you know, going back to the 80s and 70s. Does that make sense, Rick?
I think absolutely it does. I mean, back in the 70s, Heine came up with this comment. He says, the way governments are explaining all this is, it can't be, therefore it isn't. And that's it. And I'm with you. I've seen those, and it's like something's going on there. I mean, the machines don't lie. Something is happening. We don't know what it is. You know, the other thing I've been noticing is all of a sudden archaeology is kind of twisting and turning in its chair because they're finding these things that can't be, but they are. And you know how we talk about inductive reasoning? We go through all the things that seem to make sense, and when nothing else makes sense, whatever's left must be or close to being right. Yeah. And they'll go through all these things, and when the answer might be that there was somebody from somewhere else that came here, well, that can't be because it isn't. But if that's the case, the Antikythera device, I don't know, everybody knows about that. Yep. All right. They're either wrong one way or the other because they said, first of all, it's so incredible that it couldn't have been built by these people. Okay? And there wasn't a civilization before that might have built it. So then if nobody could have built it from here, then somebody could have built it from somewhere else. Well, no, that can't be. Okay, then you're wrong one way or other. Either there was a civilization here that could have built it, but you say there wasn't, or somebody else helped them visit, but you said they didn't. But yet it exists. Not a lot of room in there for wiggle. I mean, there's gotta. I mean, as far out as it might be, where am I going to go with that one?
Yeah. And I think we also have to be careful what we set our minds to. I know there's chatter in the chat room about, you know, there are 11 dimensions, 12 dimensions. We occupy 3 of them. If it's a possibility of 12 dimensions, there's also a possibility of 12,000 dimensions or more. So I think that's a perception of what dimensions you might be looking at, and again, what we get stuck in, what we want to see. So it's just a caution in that, and that's just my way of seeing it, because I have never seen that there's this limited number of dimensions.
Well, like, humans have a very difficult time trying to say that they are comfortable not knowing.
Well, you know, I think you're absolutely right. And I think, you know, for years people have talked about, you know, multiverse and this, and then quantum physics comes out and suggests, well, this may be true. Well, I don't believe in the multiverse. What I've been told, and based on my research and what I've heard, is that we've been informed or advised that there's one universe, but multi dimensions. Mm-hmm. Now, you can call that a multiverse. Now, how many dimensions? Who knows? Exactly. What is a dimension? Who knows? We're not there. We just have to accept that we're not quite there yet, that we can understand this. Somehow we think we're the top of the food chain here. And, you know, something I really liked in one of the courses I wrote, I forgot his name, you might remember it, The Lure of Completeness. I love that because every time we get to something and I watch them on TV and they do a study and I love to see the NASA people sit there, and especially if you look at a show that's 4 years old, they're so sure that Mars is like this and guess what? Oops, no.
Yeah.
Every time we think we get to the end and we found the answer, okay, that's the answer. No, maybe not.
Yeah.
So I agree with you, Dr. Vicky. We this is more complex than we can wrap our heads around at this point.
Would you agree, though, and it's not off topic really because it's still along the vein that we're talking, would you agree that something in the air has changed in the dimensional shifts?
Yeah. This is something my son is really into. And he watches different things, and I'll say to him, I said, something's changing, and he'll come out with something, and I'll say, oh, that kind of makes sense. I think there is some changes. I don't know what it is. This is kind of off topic, but not – lately it seems to me over the last 3 years, people have become zombie-like sometimes. I go out in public and they're not reacting like they used to. All right?
Exactly.
You drive on the right side of the road and the other people go on the left side. I go down an aisle and somebody comes straight down and always goes to the left. Why would you do – it's things that just like they're in a bubble all of a sudden.
And you can't blame it on COVID. You can't blame it on, other things socially that have happened. Like there's – something is repatterned.
The way we talk, what I talk about with my son is – and I don't really think this is far from the truth, but it's a great term to use. And I said, did you see – there's something different in the force today. Have you felt that? And he said, yes. I can feel that. And he'll say, well, we have a solar flare, or we had this, or we had that. But that's the way I say it, is something feels different, but I don't know what it is.
I agree. I watch it all the time. I try to be careful of what, my emotions might be versus my intuition might be, or just the practicality of observing people. But you're right about going down the left side of the aisle or what door they take in the exit. And I'm going, but what is going on here? And why aren't people stopping at the stop sign?
Well, the one that drives me nuts is I go into a parking lot and it's empty, basically empty. So I park in a parking space. All the other parking spaces are open. So somebody will come and park right next to me. Okay, I can do that. But then all the parking spaces are open, so somebody backs in. Why didn't you just drive straight through from one parking space to the other side? And I want to ask that question, but my wife won't let me. I said, it'll be really nice. But she goes, no, you're not going to ask that question. I said,
but,
right.
Then why is it that some people are not affected? Now, I have pondered this a lot. And I wonder about the connection with certain people being affected by particular energy, as your son has said, some kind of shift, and those who are not, if there's not a DNA connection.
Well, if you read some of these studies about like the radio bio, and there was recently a study out called Interbrain Synchrony that was done by, I don't know if it was Harvard or Northwestern, where they're showing that particularly people in the same room over a period of time showing the same things and doing some of the same work and whatever, it's not quite that simple, they will have almost exactly the same thoughts. They will behave in the same way. So they believe that there is a communication going on between the brains, an electromagnetic communication. They believe that to be true. And I think that could be part of it. I do think that we all have the ability to communicate with each other. I think, we have this electromagnetic field around the earth. As I mentioned at the beginning, I think that's the thing I got in trouble with the book, talking about that, how that can be used. But you bring up something else that I just thought of. If everybody keeps talking, I'm going to keep thinking of things. We'll never get done here.
Well, after this point, we'll go on to your last point. Then.
The whole thing, we've heard about people who feel like they've been possessed.
Yeah.
And I've heard people talk about people that have felt that they've been possessed, people who thought they've been abducted. And then there's other people who, like, they hear voices, but other people that feel as if they've had thoughts about things that they never knew about, or they knew answers of things they never knew. Mm-hmm. And what that came down to was what I was talking about before. Some of these psychiatrists and psychologists and whatever saying this is what we're talking about in terms of telepathic coupling.
I agree.
What they're experiencing is a connection to another energy,
yes,
life form, whatever, and they don't realize it. And then there's other people who do realize it, never say a word, and live their life that way. And these may be some of the most successful people we know. They may have, you know, I'm not saying that's me, but every now and then I'll come up with something, and it's like, how did you know that? Somebody will say, how did you? I said, I don't know. I said, is it right? And they said, yeah. I said, I don't know.
I call it a download.
Well, and it may be. You just have to be sensitive to it, I think. But we're talking about a world of energies out there, entities, creatures, people like us. And they are like us, but they're maybe us 1,000 years in the future. So to say they can't do this or they can't do that, why? Because we can't do it?
So if we go back to the beginning, could the grays have something to do with that?
They could.
Or other species.
Well, you know what? Could the grays be a repeater of some sort? Can they be, you know, we have to have that for our cable systems. Are they something which magnify? There's another race out there, and through the grays, this is how they do their thing. Mm. Sure, I stick the satellite out there so I can communicate. I can't do it directly myself. Maybe I need that type of hole.
Mm. Fascinating. All right. I love this subject. Thank you so much for coming on, Dr. Rick. I'm so glad I was actually here this time because I did listen to the first show in the archives. Fabulous discussion.
You know, thank you. This is always a lot of fun. It's interesting to talk about, and it's just like, you know, I get the feeling people do understand what I'm trying to say because sometimes people don't understand what I'm trying to say. And I know that's my fault.
Very much so. But before we wrap up, point.
We're not wrapping up yet. We have another point to cover. Okay. All right. So last point here, shouldn't be too long. Are they a product of pop culture icon, modern mythological creature? We've kind of hit on that, but I also want to include the third and final question from our student in Poland. And he asks, is it now believed that UFOs are real entities from other planets in our universe? Real entities from other universes or something else? Should they be considered living persons? We've kind of touched on all that, but if you want to just wrap that all up.
Well, I think there's two pieces to that. UFOs are different from UAPs, and that's the way the military treats them. A UFO is really might be considered extraterrestrial, absolutely, from somewhere else. There's also the question, is a UFO actually a living creature? If we see a shape of a craft, is that a living creature? Well, it might be because I was told at one point that these crafts, the way they're designed, like we have living skin on some of our aircraft now, are basically life as we might describe it. So the answer to that could be yes. Are they mythological? There's no question. They're probably part of modern mythology, but that's on one end of the scale. I mean, people hear enough about this. You know, everything's a gray alien. Everything that flies in the sky is a UFO. Yeah, I think that's become part of our culture. The nice part about it is at least now you can talk about it a little bit more.
Yep.
Oh, I remember talking about such things back in the 70s. It's like you were doomed.
Oh, yeah. People would look at you funny. Today, the people I run into, Dr. Vicky, sometimes you would never guess in a million years they'd want to know something about this topic. And somehow it'd come up. And the next thing you know, they're asking me all kinds of questions, whether it's my doctor or the guy fixing the electrician the other day. It's like, oh, yeah, I want to know. What about this and what about that? They're willing to talk about it.
Oh, back in the early 70s, I just had this stuck in my head. Quantum physics is the answer. And I had no idea about quantum physics, and I was lousy in science. But over the years, very slowly, I understand the principle of quantum mechanics, quantum physics, entanglement. And I went, of course, that's, you know, it makes perfect sense.
It really does, and now that we start to understand it, it's funny how you mentioned that. I've told the story 100 times. My kids will go, yes, Dad, we heard that story. When I was in 8th grade, I did a science project, and I built a laser. My father helped me get me a ruby and whatever, and it worked for like a tenth of a second or whatever. But I wrote the whole thing up, and I said how I thought laser was going to be the tool of the future. It was going to do things for us that we couldn't imagine. I don't really remember what I said. And now, you know, the other day I had a problem with my eye, and they repaired it with a laser.
Wow.
And which couldn't have been done probably 10 years ago or whatever. No. Or I see something else done, a laser. Laser light is perfect clean energy. And I think that's what we're talking about in the universe. It's like, how did I know that? I don't know. Maybe it looked fun. Maybe I saw it on Star Trek. Who knows? But it seemed to resonate somehow. So I know what you're talking about.
Awesome. You know, there are not very many people in our everyday lives we can have these conversations with. I so appreciate this program, and thank you to, you know, Dr. Douglas Kelly for week after week, you know, making sure that we have this group effort and bringing guests like yourself, Rick, because, you know, it's like a home and a family here where we can open our minds to all kinds of concepts and meet awesome people like you.
Thank you. You know, I feel the same way that you know, Dr. Doug does this, Dr. Mike. There are people out there that do want to hear this. And not only that, but I learn stuff back. I can read some of the chat. I at least have one eye to read some of the chat. Once is living skin on some of our aircraft. Yes, we do have living skin on some of our aircraft.
Wow.
You know, that type of thing. You remember the $200 hammer? People were all upset about that in the 90s. And then why would you buy a $200 hammer for the air?
Yeah.
Because we have stealth skin on our aircraft and you can't use a regular hammer.
That's great.
Well, Dr. Rick, I want to tell you it's been great to be on the program with you yet again. And please come back. Please come back sometime soon. I'm sure it's been a hit. Everybody would love you to come back, and I'll turn it back over to Michael.
Well, this has just been fantastic for me, too. Thank you so much, Dr. Rick, for being here. I've been sitting back and listening, and rarely have the thought, wait, I'm part of this. I can chime in, too, if I want to, but I don't want to. I just want to sit back and just absorb it. So thank you very much for this. I've just thoroughly enjoyed myself. I love the points, love the discussion and chat. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. So, but it is that time of night, so hopefully we can coerce Dr. Rick into coming back sometime soon. But thank you, Dr. Douglas Kelly, for joining us, too. It's always good having you.
My pleasure. Good to be here.
Thank you all.
Thank you so much. And Dr. Vicki, it is that time. So as we're beginning to wrap up, do you have any last thoughts?
Oh, I just appreciate everybody. You know, and while people are putting their carts down the wrong side of the aisle, just push the pause button and watch the show.
Well said, well said, and healthy advice. Well, thank you, everybody, again. It has been truly wonderful. Please join us next week. We're going to be having another wonderful topic. And until then, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.